you find there's anything analogous? I'm trying to think in sport terminology, I suppose, or in sport word, because that's where you're coming from, and this is sort of the contest that we're talking about, which the irony of the Olympics is about. I mean, you mentioned earlier tonight that the Olympics is what, about like 5% about sport, and all of this, all of the rest is, comes in, you know, calls in questions of politics, nationalism, I don't know, whatever.
Gender.
Yes.
Policing of bodies.
All of these. So.
Able versus disabled.
How do we negotiate this sort of balance between an individual player? I bet any player will tell you, well, not any, but a lot of players will tell you they're doing it and they want to succeed because they may, hopefully they love the game. They want to, you know, prove themselves in the same way that you say you want to prove yourself as a writer or that as a thinker. And when those things get pushed out into a sort of team identity, a country's patriotism, mm-hmm. a I don't know, media sort of sponsorship of those things, and an international spectacle that becomes the Olympics, like, I don't know, this is somehow something that I'm trying to relate to in my project, you know. Mm-hmm. This is the sort of extreme juxtaposition that we've got with the lives of the people that are living in this neighborhood and the thing that's been brought upon us here.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and make a little comparison between your first point and your second point. And there was a writer on the Net Time mailing list named Chad Scoville who asked prior to the Olympics if we ought to be, not that people aren't already, but if we ought to be not even more critically attentive to the media construction of these games, as he believed it was going to be the biggest media singularity, the Beijing Olympics would be the biggest media singularity since 9/11. Now,
what do you define as media singularity?
Well, and this is just it, as I have problems with him using those terms, because, and I'm going to use both of your examples in sort of refuting him in a way, and you asked about this individual athlete.
Uh-huh.
You know, this individual athlete who has been brought up his or her whole life in this sort of Western philosophical tradition of progress and faster, higher, stronger, mm-hmm. you know, the Olympic motto. And
that's funny that you tag that Western, because this exact same, you know, in Chinese, like, what is it? Gun kuai, gun qiang, gun shi ma, I don't know. It's the same. Faster, stronger, higher.
Okay.
Gao. It's exactly the same in Chinese. I don't know if that's taken from a Western tradition or not. But that immense pressure for progress is very much a part of Chinese 20th century history.
Okay.
Right?
Now, this actually, faster, higher, stronger, comes from ancient Greek.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Citius altius fortius.
Okay.
And so this sort of ancient Greek idea of citius altius fortius resonated very well, of course, with sort of post-Enlightenment thought on progress.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, which ended up turning into the reintroduction of the modern Olympics in 1896. And so everything sort of came to this head. And, of course, in the 20th century, we see fastest, highest, strongest taken to its, you know, almost logical conclusion, where we've got these
0.08
0.08 milliseconds of a race, you know? Like, what does that mean? It means one guy's fingernail was a touch longer, you know?
Yeah.
What does it mean? What does it mean that they have to use timing technology that is derived from military technology to ensure that we can measure to 0.08?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean that athletic bodies now are so filled with particular drugs that totally challenges a fixed conception of a pure body. You know, what is a pure body now? And what are new biological interventions going to do? I mean, it's totally fucked up.
And this is why you say that there's no such thing as a media singularity?
No, so coming back, you know, you've got this athlete who is always brought up with this idea of fastest, highest, strongest, right? And go for the gold.
Uh-huh.
You know, nobody goes for the silver. Nobody goes for the bronze. Nobody goes for the handcrafted medal that you can win at a loser's party, right? You go for the gold.
Right.
And so you've got, even in team sports, you've got all these people that came from a very single-minded upbringing who all of a sudden then have to subordinate or subvert, you know, some of that to the team concept, you know, if you're a team athlete. Okay, so there, you know, there's only one star of the team. There's only a couple of stars of the team,
right?
And then there's a bunch of people who, you know, ride the bench or they play some minor role. Well, they were brought up with go for the gold and fastest, highest, strongest too, right? So already you see this, you know, mishmash or juxtaposition of desire and reality and compromise. And then you said, okay, well, you take that, and then you go from an individual to a team level, to a national team level, to an international spectacle with a worldwide media audience. And so if you break that down, you've got thousands of these individuals who are negotiating this kind of individual, very rational individual desire to go for the gold, combined with what are the other elements of this major media spectacle? The sponsors, the coaches, the power structures, the body, the police, my teammates. And the idea that we call that a singularity, to me, in a sporting context, is ludicrous. From a spectator context, I probably would have bought into Scoville's idea of a media singularity a little more when I was, you know, a non-initiated Westerner 6 months ago. All of a sudden, I come here, and I'm on the ground for the opening ceremonies, an event that certainly the world has waited for 7 years, but China has lived through for 7 years. They haven't just waited for it, because they haven't waited for it with open arms in all cases. In some cases, it's been with a cold brush of the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, it's been with very open arms. In some cases, it's been with suspicion. And it's certainly not come without pain. I mean, massive displacements of people, massive tearing downs of buildings and histories to create new, shiny, you know, spectacles for the travelers to come in and see. And yet, the opening ceremonies was the culmination of the 7 years of love and lost, pain and suffering, you know, expectation and worrying, suspicion and hope, and you know, this concomitant rise of a new China, quote unquote. And to be here on the ground for the opening ceremonies and to see, on the one hand, people at the National Stadium watching the spectacle live, and to hear from friends at home about watching it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then to be right here in a hutong with a very local public, experience in a very, very local way. There's no way you can call that a singularity either. There's absolutely no way you can call this a media singularity. And that was made stunningly evident to me when I was here for the opening ceremonies on Friday night.